Hi there, it's Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. Empower Radio. And hopefully you're having a fantastic time. Did you know it's Mercury retrograde when we're doing the show? So if anything goes funky, okay, that is my ironclad excuse. And I don't care how many people say it's all bogus. And that's what I was checking up on today because I wanted to see what the current Mercury retrograde figure is. And it's on mental flaws. Why do we blame things on Mercury retrograde? Well, because we do. All right. Yeah, I'm not going to read the article for you. I'm just going to go into it and say the thing I like about this is crash computers, missed flights, all these kinds of things supposed to expect when Mercury is retrograde. And what it says, according to the guy who is an astronomer at Chicago's Adler Planetarium, we don't know of any physical mechanism that would cause things like power outages or personality changes in people. Okay, so that's it. That doesn't say it isn't possible, it isn't happening. It says we don't know the physical mechanism. It doesn't have to be physical. That's the cool thing about this stuff. And when you get into things that I deal with on a regular basis, there's no physical element involved, but there is an influence, a direct influence on the manifest plane, what we experience as physical. And so with that, that's what I wanted to get into in some of the ways that these non-manifest elements can influence and affect us and that we can acknowledge or identify when that's happening. I find it fascinating. And there are so many ways that people deal with this, and there's no one perfect way. The extraordinary thing about all of this is all of the ways work. We are each unique. We have our own internal insight, essence, awareness. And when we tap into that, we can do extraordinary things. So I'm going to go across the board with a few just connections to toss in. First, I do want to say, if you're trying to connect with me through Facebook, I'm backing off with some of that because of the things that Facebook does to try to get you to boost your post with ads. And it was a wonderful way to connect with people a few years back. But now when I go on and the first prompt I see on any of my pages is buy ads or buy a, promote, it doesn't show me what's on my page. It shows me the promote, and it goes through stages when it will try and encourage you to do things like that. But that's one of the recent phases of going to your page and showing you an immediate prompt to buy. And then otherwise your posts don't get seen. Now that's been happening a long time, but this is a little bit more aggressive in terms of using the product and paying for it, monetizing. And I understand that. So I'm going a different direction. The stuff that I post is always on my blog, Wendy's Coffee House. And you'll find the things that I am either, talking about, promoting, supporting, or in some way, shape, or form connected to. Those things are posted on the blog. And the other thing I use is Twitter. And that kind of helps promote that. And I also have a regular Facebook page. But in terms of getting a lot of content, more bang for your buck, the blog is the best focus. And that usually I try to connect whoever I'm interviewing at the time with some of the content. And I tend to focus more on the UFO, the unexplained, the extraordinary, because I think that's where we learn. I think that's where we're in some way, shape, or form influenced by potentials rather than things that have already happened that everybody has some kind of a concept or this is why it happens. I prefer to focus on the we don't know why it happens so that we can keep going up and integrating and elevating and learning and evolving. What happens is when we think we know something, we kind of put it in the can, case closed. Or we think somebody else knows something, we put it in the can, case closed. What keeps those cans open, what keeps our reality continuing to progress and in some way, shape, or form expand is the little unknowns, the little quirks, the little things that make you go, what just happened? Some of the people who do that aren't well known. And that's the great thing about it, because that means their stuff isn't all in some way, shape, or form homogenized or in a bigger way taken to a level where it's all the same And that then you lose the elements that make it special and that give you reasons to go, okay, what does that mean? Where's that go? Where are we going with this? So the Mercury retrograde this week, I do traffic for a local radio station organizations. And so it's one of those things where for the past almost 5 years now, I've been able to look and see what happens during the moon, you know, full moon, new moon, the whole nine yards. I haven't done a journal with it. Occasionally I have written it down. The fun one to write down this week was the traffic on Mercury retrograde when it started. And we are loaded all across. I live in a metropolitan city in the United States, all across the board. The most accidents we have had since last winter with the ice storms. And so here we are. And now the logic is that they didn't ice the streets, or they didn't salt the streets. And so the ice was a problem. And that's the cool thing. There's always a logical connection. The thing is, why and what prompted that, and why the convenient, happy accident of being at the same time accident as Mercury retrograde. So for me, it's like, okay, there you go. And that's just one. I worked in retail too. So these things are kind of an interesting way of observing larger groups of people and larger interactions. And I have seen studies that go both ways. There's no impact, or there is an impact. And people who work in emergency rooms, and people who work in trauma centers, and people who are on the front lines working with lots and lots of people and having other little incidents of things going wrong and misconnections, and again, computers going wonky. In these kinds of instances, you can do your own homework and you can make your own conclusions. But usually the word is just be cautious and also allow that this too shall pass. Whatever is going on, this too shall pass. It's a reason to just kind of step back, let things roll through in a way that makes everything fluid. It may cause you to take a little extra time. It may cause you not to think as straight as you thought you were going to, because you were going to go from point A to point B and it was going to be, yeah, flawless. Oops. But the other thing is, don't blame it and don't say, well, that's bad. Just say, it's different. It's different. Something I needed to see. And there's a reason I needed to take a step back. That's part of what these things are about, is reminding us that although we think in logical terms of everything going A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, okay, following a sequence, a numerical or some kind of a linear flow, that isn't the way reality works. With our reality, and I love it because the physics is now saying, you know, with it in terms of our universe being bubbles, like little tiny bubbles, like I'm not going to sing Don Ho, but with that element of not being quite what we thought. And so that brings in the different dimensions and the multidimensional awareness that we have and that we can develop if we're not aware of it. It's present all the time. And part of that multidimensional awareness and being has to do with, we are not just the corporeal. We are a spirit. We are essence. We are that enigma that they have no way of defining. It is a piece of consciousness. And so we're part of the collective whole here while we're in the physical and impacting people in whatever way we do. And there's no right or wrong. That's just, it's, we're bumping against each other all the time. And the fun thing about that is, when you go into somebody else's reality bubble, then things in your world might turn a little wonky, because all of a sudden you're bumping up into their limits or their open doors and open windows. And they say that this is how it works in my world. And I've run into people who I was bound and determined to say, no, it doesn't. But lo and behold, when I got into their world, it's exactly the way their world worked. They hit roadblocks, they hit hurdles, they hit bumps, they hit closed doors. And I was just astounded, because that wasn't my way. My way was a completely different approach. And I hadn't had that response until I paired up with somebody who showed me their reality. So as you become more aware that each of us has a specific influence on our surroundings, on our way of being, you can become more flexible in your approach to the world. Now, this gets into the UFO stuff, and it gets into the non-corporeal, the spirit guides and the ghosts and all of the other beings that people, some people, argue are not real. They're real if you experience one. Because if you, when you experience it, your realness factor has become enlightened. And that makes all the difference in the world. When I was a kid, as somebody posted on Facebook talking about, I don't know what prompted it, but we'll go back to astral travel. When I was a kid, I used to, at night, dream. And in my dream, I was flying. So I was out of body. And I was looking at the, I have no idea why this was the optimal place to go, but I would visit the grade school and fly over the outdoor playgrounds and stuff over the grade school. And that was one of the things that I did several times. And I realized, well, you know, if I can go here, I can go other places. And that was a thing, though, that the reason I did it and continued was, could I repeat it? And so when I went to sleep and did that several times, it gave me confidence that I could repeat it. Unfortunately, when I do stuff like that, it's like, okay, been there, done that. See you, bye. I don't tend to evolve. It's just a way of me touching base and knowing, okay, yeah, that's doable. And so when somebody else says this is what they do, yeah, uh-huh, sure, got it. But one of the fun things I did with that, and this involved another out of body, where I was in touch with that cord. And, you know, some people say it doesn't exist. Other people say they do. Well, I experienced it. So for me, it does. And it doesn't every time. But the one time I was way out and I was on my way out to stars, and I thought, as I'm flying and seeing the earth, you know, behind me and out in space in my own little world, universe, bubble, I'm thinking, I don't know if I want to do this by myself. I would rather take somebody to go see this with me. And that was the decision. I also knew that I only had so much cord to work with. And maybe I should stop before I ran out and, you know, had to go back forcefully. But that was also, it was part of that thinking in the non-corporeal element. And as I'm doing the astral flight going, I really want to do this with somebody. So at that moment, I knew that having a connection, an attachment to someone else for me in my life was important. That was the beauty of doing that little exercise. And it was incredible. It was just that the freeing feeling when you are out and you know you're out is beyond words. So, and that's what people who have near-death experiences and people who also do the out-of-body experiences have to share and say, you know, there's no way to put this in words. It's beyond words. I have to just, you know, say it was cool. It was great. It was something life enhancing. And so with that, there's another element to this that goes back to the reality bubble. And I was working with a shaman, and in that space of time, I needed a boost. I needed a reminder that my guides are real. And I didn't know how this would manifest. I just knew that I was sensing a need to make things more, I guess, concrete for me, knowing that I'm working with the guides. I'm working with the nightlight. That's 24/7. It hasn't stopped. It's been over 20 years. And so that energy that's non-corporeal and doesn't like to have a name, because we don't, we tend to put things in a box as soon as we have a name. As soon as we think we know something, it's in the box. I can't explain it. I know it's connected to me, and we are connected telepathically, so it can speak. But working the nightlight gives me that manifest, you know, that physical element that says that it's here, that the presence is here, and it's always here. And so that's it. Just for me, I guess I've got that child mind of wow, because that never goes away, and I could not have predicted that that would be the case. So I'm working with a shaman, and the shaman, the guides, my guides are there, and the guides are saying at that point that they need to show me something. And so as we're working, there's this, I get this, there's this buildup of energy, And the buildup is because it's taking a while and the questions are going away from their perspective. I'm kind of in two places with this. From their perspective, it's taking too while to get to the point. And at a moment, all of a sudden, that energy has built and I am out of my body. I feel myself being just launched. And it took me a while to go back and see the meanings of this because, you know, when you have an experience, a spiritually transformative event of any kind, it rocks your world. And then your view of reality all of a sudden goes through this metamorphosis of, okay, after the holy heck part of it, wow, there are no words. There's no way of reconciling it. You're just going, oh boy, wow. All right. So after all that, I was above, away, outside, beyond this plane. Everything was black. There was nothing. It was a void. And at the same time, I feel me. I am me. I don't seem to have a body that I'm aware of, but what I'm focused on is this little thing that looks like maybe the only way I could describe it was an egg around, you know, its colors inside of it. And from my point of view at that point, it was probably about the size of an orange or a smaller. And so it gives me an idea that I'm way far away. At the same time, though, if I'm looking at it with more of a three-dimensional, it could be, instead of an egg, it could be a bubble. And everything that I am and that I know and that I am a part of in the physical plane is all right there in that little circle, in that little egg. And so for me to think that what happened was everything around me just disappeared, the reason that I had that point of view of being far away and detached was it because there was that one little bubble. That was my bubble. That was my reality, my existence, all of my stuff in a neat and tidy container. So what was happening was the person who was sitting beside me on the couch is still right there. The shaman right across from me, still right there. The couch, the room, everything within that reality is in that little bubble. And so that's why when I saw this most recent scientific what they would call discovery or equation or, you know, something that they're pondering, that this could be the way the universe works with these wonderful little bubbles. I'm thinking, yeah, that's it. That's what all of our universes are. And you can go in and out in between and around and beyond. And that's what happens when I have seen others who enter our dimension and then walk out. They're not here, but they're also not there. They're between. And so we're given a moment to observe the between, the in-between. And when we go out of body, or when we meditate, or when we zone out, when we dream, we're in that state, that fluid state of being able to go in between. And the near death is when you leave the body and then come back. And sometimes you come back with a few enhancements. Just because I'm talking with PMH Atwater recently, and I'll be talking with her again. One of the shows that I did for the Wendy's Coffee House, PMH Atwater, I've talked with her a few times, but the most recent one, she's doing the Forever Angels on near-death experiences of children. And this is a really fantastic, she's been doing this for what, 40 years. So she has these big archives of research with near-death experiencers because she had three NDEs and all of a sudden was in a world of, wow, this isn't reality everybody else deals with, and where do I go with it? So that's what's been her driving force for the last few decades of figuring out how this works for people and why it works and what it's about. And the near-death experiences that children have are completely different than adults. The children don't have all the baggage of heaven and hell. It doesn't, for them, that's a construct here on the physical plane. So they go into this non-being state where things are incredible and joyful and beautiful, bliss, because the other stuff, the dogma, the drama, the, you know, all of the stuff we have here, the trauma drama, it, for them, isn't real yet. It isn't a part of that. So they go touch base and come back. And a lot of them, unfortunately, there is a huge issue with not being able to reconnect to the physical plane because it was stopped before they really were fully engaged. And there's that memory of a nicer place elsewhere. People here are mean. You know, the things here are often unpleasant. Or that's an experience when they run into that, that then it's like another reason to disconnect, to tune out and remember how wonderful someplace else is. And so that for them is in a lot of ways very traumatic. But the memories that they put and that she has compiled with their pictures of knowing where they were and what was going on at the time, some of the, you know, pre-birth memories, connecting with people who are deceased after they come back. These stories are worth reading because it gives you another template, another basis for saying, what else is this about? What all are we trying to put into this life, this being, this incarnation? And dealing with people who've had past life memories. My stepsister, when she was very young, told my grandmother, I used to dance with you when I was a boy. She has no memory of it as an adult. But that was one of those things that said, okay, she's been here before. I met my cousin's little boy again when he was, and these guys have to be under the age of six, you know, right there, that between four and five. And he came up to my dog, Max, German Shepherd. Max was my companion, and he was a soulmate. He was here to help me get through some of this early process of integrating the nightlight, the energy, the expanded consciousness, all of that stuff that I didn't have words for. I didn't know what it was called. And I still don't. But I try and put it in a box so other people can label it and maybe make sense of it and make it linear. So that part of it, he came up and he said, we came from the same place. He was there. And I said, well, where? And it was blue, he said. And then he made the shape of a basketball. So the shape of the basketball, this blue sphere that he and Max, my dog, came from. I thought, oh my gosh, how brilliant to have that awareness. But there was no box for it. He was describing his memory of where they came from. And it had nothing to do with a body. It had to do with a being in space, in a place that they both could identify with. And Max was an extraordinary, extraordinary presence in my life. The guides told me the other is coming before I had Max. The other is coming. What the heck? Who is the other? And I'm thinking it's a person, you know, somebody's going to come into my life, offer me a job. It'll be cool. Now, what happened was at work, somebody brought a dog in and said, or they came in and they said, we've got a dog. We just need a foster home temporarily. I've never done the foster home thing before. But I knew we could make space for a dog. And so I said, sure. Yeah. I took Max home to visit, to stay, give him a nice cushy place. And temporarily, my husband said, he's staying, isn't he? I said, no. This is temporary. This is foster. Well, of course, Max stayed. But the way Max stayed, though, was he'd already been through five homes. And he came to my house and the people who brought him, a mom and her two girls, and the girls were in tears. She said, one of the I'm guessing Max was a handful because I took Max up the street and we were maybe half a block away. And I said, sit. Max sat ASAP, just plopped down. I came back. Max was trained. They didn't know Max had any rules, had any boundaries, or was trained. The first week I had Max, he ran away. He thought I was ready to go to the pound, try and see if I could track him down because Friday was euthanization day. And I wanted to get ahead of that. And, he came walking down the sidewalk and my husband saw him and he let him in the house. He comes walking up the stairs and I'm looking at him from the stairs saying, oh my gosh. And the nightlight had come to tell me we were there to make a decision. The nightlight had stopped for some reason in this interim. The nightlight was staying off the entire time and I'm heartbroken in thinking I've done something wrong and he ran away. And at that time, he's coming up the stairs with his tail between his legs. And I committed to walking him twice a day, and reminding him that he was very much a part of my life. And he committed to staying in the yard. All right. Those are guidelines and templates. But back to that non-corporeal thing, that being out and about and aware. There's another element that if you're reading, and there are other people who are sensitive and other people who work with this unseen, there are some little clues that are connections with people. And fog is one of them. So I'm going to draw some connections. The connections will be between others who have experienced fog and why that might be an indication. There's more going on here, and our reality is fluid, not concrete. And once you learn to be more fluid in your encounters, your engagements, your expectations, reality mirrors back to you that open window of potential anytime, any place. That's working with your intuition. That's working with that spirit guidance, with the non-corporeal, which we all know when we're out of body. We get here and we get stuck. So let's get unstuck. Conscious Living and Power Radio. I'm Wendy Garrett, back in a few.
Did you know that 7 in 10 girls believe they are not good enough or don't measure up in some way? I'm Amy Poehler. You may know me from film and television, but I'm also involved off-screen, encouraging young girls to be proud of who they are. Body image breakdowns and the pressure to be perfect often causes a girl's self-esteem to plummet. But by being positive role models, we can change that. The number one wish among girls is for their parents to communicate better with them, including more frequent and more open conversations. So get involved and start talking. Begin a conversation with a girl in your life about the importance of self-esteem. Tell her why she is beautiful and set an example by avoiding negative self-talk. You can make a difference in the lives of girls, and that is no laughing matter.
This message was brought to you by American Women in Radio and Television and was made possible through the generous support of the Dove Self-Esteem Fund, working together to raise self-esteem in girls everywhere. To learn more, go to campaignforrealbeauty.com. Thank you for making a difference.
You're struggling with your mortgage. You think about it. You don't do anything but think about it.
What are we going to do if we lose the house? Where are we going to go?
At work.
I can't let anybody find out. I'm so embarrassed.
At dinner.
How can I tell the kids? It's going to wreck their lives.
And at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get through this. What's going to happen to us?
It's time to stop thinking. It's time to start dialing. Call 1-888-995-HOPE for a free government program that offers expert one-on-one advice about your mortgage options.
I'm all alone.
No, you're not. We've helped over a million homeowners, and we want to help you. And now there are more ways to help. Call 1-888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov. Brought to you by the
U.S. Treasury. It's me, your heart. High blood pressure is serious, and if you think I'm just going to keep ticking away, you're wrong. I can quit whenever I want, but I like my job. Just treat me better. Maybe we can do some exercise on occasion? After all, we're in this together.
Don't let your heart quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get yours to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to Mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Conscious Living on Empower Radio. Hi there, I'm Wendy. Okay, we're back. Now, this isn't necessarily a rabbit hole, but it, for some people it might be. I'm going to connect a few dots with the fog. And the funny thing is, recently I've fell across some information that seemed to all make sense. And then one more piece of the equation was Witness of Another World. And this is a fantastic film. If you are an experiencer And if you've had people say, you know, it's just we can't prove it. It doesn't happen. This is all somebody's imagination. It's all somebody messing with your mind. You know, it's a psyops kind of thing. You really didn't experience it. Okay. You know, you hear all those things, all the detractors and all of the stuff from people who haven't had your experience telling you that it isn't real. This is what happens when people do that to somebody who is an experiencer. The movie is all about trauma. Really. It's all about what happens when you're ostracized, when you're belittled, when you're shamed, when you're told that you have no value because what you've experienced is completely off the charts and it doesn't matter. So we're focused on one, South America. He is, as a little boy, he has an extraordinary encounter with a UFO, not only a UFO, and he doesn't even explain it as a UFO. He sees this, and he calls it in the words that they translate, tractor, room. He's out in the field. He's walked through this fog area that was out in the field as he's going out to get horses and, or get the herd. I'm sorry. And one way or the other, he's by himself. And the fog is in the field. And so he walks through the fog and then there's this manifestation. And the manifestation is they are beings and things are happening. I'm not going to tell you the whole thing. I want you to see the film. And the other part of that is that after this experience, he has consequently, some capacity to feel others. The telepathy thing is enhanced. His dreams are enhanced. He has abilities that he hasn't had to deal with before, and they scare him because there's nobody to talk about with this. You know, there's nowhere to get support or understanding. He's completely isolated for 30 some years. Jacques Vallée is one of the ones who did the research on this. So it was in a book, and Alan Stivelman then discovered it, and he's doing his own research and his own trying to come to terms with who he is and what all of this is about. He runs across that story, so he goes to interview Juan and find out firsthand what it was like. As he's doing this, he's realizing there's more to this story and it needs to be told, and maybe we need to connect some dots so Juan can heal, because he still has post-traumatic stress after over 30 years. Life is for him torture. Okay. So that's part of what it gets into, is setting up the framework and going back and producing the documents at the time and the TV at the time coverage of what was happening with this event. And so through that, you learn his experiences and how very real. And the results are that he has abilities that are real, that he has a whole different connection with life and the non-corporeal that is real. And what that brings me back to is that somebody sent me the book, and I had already downloaded this back years ago when it was available, Penetration by Ingo Swann. And somebody sent me the new book. I have no idea. I tried to track it to see who sent it. I appreciate it. Thank you. This is a special edition. So it's an expanded and updated version. The estate of Ingo Swann is very active, and that is fantastic, because this is another way to say, get outside the box. Get outside your reality limits, your circle, your egg, your bubble. Because there's a whole lot of stuff going on, and it's really much more interesting if you're involved with it. And so one of the things that he puts in here, the major purpose of a certain section that he includes about the moon, is not to present evidence of anything, but to show that evidence does not seem to matter. That part of it is important, because when we're trying to figure out what is real, it has to do with sometimes consensus reality says one thing and evidence leads to another. How is that spelled out in that film, Witness of Another World? The evidence, he actually had a wound, a puncture wound on his arm that said he encountered something. He had post-traumatic stress. He had images. He had, in some way, shape, or form, clues that something beyond our knowing had happened. But the consensus reality of shaming him and saying it's all fiction, it doesn't matter, you are weird, stay away from us, made it non, in our way of thinking, non-essential. It was unimportant. Now, the thing about this is, these experiences have been going on for centuries. They're all over the world and continually denied and derided. People are shamed. They're weird. They don't have any value. They're not one of us. Wait. Maybe there are more of us experiencers than the others, but we don't talk about it because we've been told to shut up. We've been told it isn't important. It has no value. It doesn't make money. It makes people frightened that they don't know what to do because that changes their worldview. And it certainly changes all the textbooks. That's a lot of money. So that part of it, being able to connect the dots and being able to look under, you know, behind the curtain, under the rug, what else is here? So you get into that when you start dealing with these other beings. Somebody wrote a thing about a shadow being. And I thought, well, you know what? Yeah, they called them the djinn. The labels don't make any sense because I don't think we are at this point in our own evolution evolved enough to keep these things all in one neat and tidy box. I think it's different. If I see a shadow being, it may not be what everybody else labels it. I saw a darting shadow recently, and they tried to say, well, those are those little things that are appearing in the air, and they're UFOs, and blah, blah, blah. Well, my shadow being felt like an entity, somebody trying to see me, and then I saw them, and they got caught, and they moved, which is exactly what happened with the UFO that happened in my house. As soon as I tried to home in on it, I got to memorize how many, I wish I had a photographic memory that would come in handy. I'm trying to memorize how many lights are on it. The colors, fortunately, red and green, it was really darn simple. And then it looked like a plate, the size of a dinner plate. And then those lights, about 14 lights. Well, okay, as I'm trying to factor that in and get that all assembled in my mind so I can remember it, it goes from inside the house to outside. I see the lights through the blinds and I know, well, okay, that's great. End of encounter. I knew I didn't want to be seen. It had already been seen enough and I was going to have to do something with that to make sense of it. Okay, but that kind of thing happens for people. And when we don't report it, we don't allow our consensus reality to evolve and expand. When we do report it, we risk being an outcast. And it takes a certain point of your, awareness, your psyche, your evolution of consciousness to finally say, maybe that's not that important. Maybe I don't have to fit in. Maybe I don't have to be a clone. I don't have to be a lockstepper. I can say, you know what? This is different. And then I can find others and connect the dots. And so for me, that's what it's about. A lot of it is connecting dots. And so in connecting dots, the fog is the connecting dot. When he walks out into the field, there's this layer of fog. And in the film, Witness of Another World, they do a wonderful job of laying out that scenario of him walking through the window through the fog. Okay, there are some other stories. David Pilates does the witness, does the 411, the missing 411. One of the stories in there has to do with a little girl that they thought they were doing, instead of a rescue, it was going to be a recovery. It was the third day. This is a small child, and she's been out in the wilderness on her own. No extra clothing, anything like that. And the two ladies that they interview in this film, and I think it's The Hunted, that's the one in The Hunted. I can't remember where he puts that one, and he's got three or four films, and they're worth contemplating, because these are stories where people have been found miles away from where they disappeared, and some of them there's no way to figure out logically, physically, how that could have happened. It makes no sense. And the clothing might be laid out in a certain way. They may be completely, the clothing's gone. There are some really curious elements to this. And especially when you go back and do more math, and there's an article on, I think it's Mysterious Universe, and it talks about, Mysterious Universe. It talks about, and it was from 2016, the Almost Vanished. All right. Now I'll post this on the Wendy's Coffee House blog, because I think this is one of the ones that does a lot of dot connecting and different stories about people vanishing and coming back. Anyway, this little girl walks back out of the fog. There she is. These two women are absolutely astounded, going, yeah, she walked up and there she was out of the fog. That to me is a dimension shift. That's an indication something else is going on that we don't have a physical definition for. Why? How? What happened? One of the stories in this other article, Mysterious Universe, talks about, and Art Bell followed it. Art's fabulous for these kinds of things. A woman who vanished on her way home visiting a neighbor. And she said there was an unseen barrier. She was walking home, said she felt a jerk on her body. And her body's like going away. She hadn't intended to go. And she said this unseen barrier kept her from returning to where she wanted to go. And it was pushing her a different way. And she could see search party members looking for her. And they couldn't see her, no matter how much she called out or banged against that barrier. The barrier finally lifted and she could go home, but frightened to death. Okay, that goes back to with a woman who lives in Sedona. Said she was out hiking on the trail with her friends. And she stepped across onto, you know, from one rocky area to another and then took a few steps. And at the time she turned around to see them. And she's looking at them. And I think she said she talked. They didn't respond. And finally, she was just walking around and she realized they didn't seem to be aware of her. And so she retraced her steps and walked back over to where they were. They said, well, where were you? And there was a time difference as well with this, that they thought she had been missing for either a shorter or longer time than she had been away. For her, it was, you know, a few minutes. For them, it was more like half an hour. And that part of it suggested that she stepped into a different dimension, a different reality bubble. And there's a little compilation of stories of missing and unusual disappearances that talks about that same kind of thing. He went into a completely different reality, spent the night somewhere, came back, and then they told him that place didn't exist. There was no farmhouse where he had spent the night. This is complete fiction. And he has this incredible memory of the whole thing. He spent the night, met the family, and then they told him, well, my family's going to miss me. I need to go back. And they told him to just follow this little trail over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house. Never, not quite that. Anyway, they told him to take the trail and it would take him back to his house. He did. And then he turned around from where he had just been and seen a cornfield or something, you know, different than what he saw when he turned around. Gone. The reality he had just left, where everything was all bright and beautiful and the people were there and the family was there and they entertained him, was now, there's another show on the internet available now, One Step Beyond, that has a story similar to where somebody spends a night in a hotel, and the hotel, when they get out, the hotel's not there. So these stories, and that one, and they, One Step Beyond, they try to document these. They try to say, this is a story that was reported, corroborated in some way, that this is something we know happened and we have no explanation for. So it's a really fun story, black and white. The stories that are all, I think the show was 60, about the same time that Twilight Zone came out, 1960, 61, in that time frame, the original version of it. And that's one worth, if you're curious about things that happened that have no explanation, they've got a whole, you know, compilation there worth exploring. But okay, so the fog there with a little girl coming out of the fog and the UFO out of the fog. John Foster, Eminent Discovery, his books. And he's in his 80s now. He when he was 48 or so, he had all of a sudden the memories of encounters with UFO intelligences from the time he was little. And at that time, he had 3 heart attacks because this was absolutely mind-shattering and consciousness rewriting. It did not set well. And so for him to deal with these memories that came pouring out. He's an engineer. The beauty of that is he has written three books, four, if not, that talk about and give you pictures of the encounters and how it happened. And the fog element is crucial because they would appear inside, outside. The fog appears. That's a dimension shift. And Ingo Swann in his book talked about being taken to a place they knew they were going to view a UFO. He didn't. They did. They didn't tell him. And so he knew they were going to view, he experiences this. And what happens is it comes out of space, it didn't fly in from Jupiter or Pluto or Neptune. It all of a sudden it manifests and it in front of him, this whole thing just slowly reveals itself. And they ask him, well, what kind of image? Well, they all run for one thing, because they said, oh, it's the heat, you know, it destroys anything. It's got a heat search on it, and we need to get out of here. So they get out. He gets hurt, and hurts his leg. It falls. And they ask him, what'd you think? What kind of impression did you get? He said, okay, you know what? Usually when we set people up for remote viewing, we give them a clue. We tell them, this is what a nuclear facility, nuclear unit looks like. Do you see anything like that? You told me zero. So my mind, I am fried. I have to go back so I can get an indication beyond being stupefied to what was here. And this is the beauty of this, because we're learning how this works in him telling the story. When you see something the first time, it's OMG. What the fuck? Okay? That fight or flight thing kicks in. Want it or not, that's what happens. We are human. It works that way. So, especially when it's that far outside of our belief system. So out of that, we first have to come back to center of just breathe. Just breathe. And beyond that, we go into, okay, what's happening? If you're still standing there and you haven't run away. And that part of it is, he was saying, I needed that moment of identification. Now I can go back and go beyond that, because I know what I know what to expect. I have a template and I can work with that, a blueprint. And they said, well, that's it. Our tour of duty here is ending. So that was your one and only. He's like, okay, fine. And by the way, they wanted him to go see the doctor to get a physical, because they want to know what, you know, kind of impact that had on him. And he's going, I have a remote viewing session with a submarine on a submarine. I have to be there, so I can't do this, which I thought was great. I have important things to do, so I'm not going to be able to do this. And in the meantime, you find out from other researchers and experiencers and people who've been involved in some of these kind of activities with the military, that they have also asked for physicals to, you know, to see what the impact is on our physiology and if there is one, and document that. And so you're kind of a guinea pig at the same time you're doing work for them. All right. But Ingo Swann on the potential that maybe there could be something else involved with those physicals opted out of that one. And I think that's kind of, you know, a happy coincidence that he opted out, and others who haven't opted out might have had other things happen in conjunction with these experiments. That's just me. That's conjecture. Okay. So just file that away as I'm making an observation that may not have relevance. However, that's the thing is with that, seeing it manifest out of nothing, out of nowhere, that's a dimension that we are interacting and can engage with. And so some of these other stories, when they say this, and when you get into Bigfoot and you get into other kinds of entities that come in and out of our world, it doesn't mean that all of a sudden they are walking through a door. It may mean that we are shifting our consciousness, awareness, or we're in a space that is less, in our world, concrete, is less, it's fluid. So there's a door, a window, a shift, and we can engage, or it can engage with us. These things are mind-blowing. Another person who goes into the fog aspect is Bruce Gernon. And what he has, he says that there's an electronic fog. And what happened for him was when he went and experienced it near the Bermuda Triangle. And so his thing with the electronic fog, and I interviewed him three or four years ago, but this fog, it creates, and sometimes the thunderstorm cells, he explains that it'll last, and the fog can last for several hours after the storms dissipate, and it can drift. And then what happens is an aircraft that flies through it will have complications. So when this happened to him years ago, he started connecting dots and looking for more instances and more hearing, you know, more stories of this electronic fog. And one time he said he was with a friend on, I believe it was on a golf course, and they saw this mist coming toward them, and they left. Nope. Okay. So I thought that was interesting, because there's that other instance of electronic fog. My point here is, as I deal with all these stories, I've got an interview coming up, Angels in the OR. I haven't interviewed Ron Quinn of Little People, but that talks about the little people who go in between. There's another book that I had on my stack of Jot, Mary Rose Barrington, talks about when things disappear and come back or relocate and why it can happen. All of these things say we have a much larger reality field. And if you are stuck in your bubble and only dealing with your stuff, you're limited. So once you start expanding, and one way to do that is in the dream, all you have to do is realize that it's possible. You don't even have to believe it. You just know that it's possible. Once it's possible, then you could make a decision. And you can focus from then on and change your life really easily by, instead of focusing on what you don't want, shift. Focus on what you do want and make those things your primary. Whenever you're doing, you know, your mind is wandering, your primary contemplations. What do you want? What is available? What is possible? I want to know. In my way, intuitive, I can be. How, if I can manifest, what I can learn from the unseen. Are there guardians? I want to know my guardian. I want to know the future. I want to know what's happening. And then don't have a board to stop you in your tracks. However, it'd be cool if it does. Okay, so don't X that out. But baby steps. You will start to see connections. You will start to get the pieces of the puzzle, and you may get it in unusual ways. You may get a billboard. You may get a ticket. You may get something that says to you, you know, the lotto win, haha, the guy who just did that, $1 million twice now, number one, and $1 million winner, number two. But the things that you focus on are the potentials, the possibles. Anything is possible. When you believe that you are in your own bubble and you got this, you can expand your bubble. Okay? It's not about making all of this go away. It's about making this relevant. Why are you where you are? What do you need to know? How can you expand your awareness? I can do anything that I allow myself to do. All right. These are belief systems. I'm not talking about concrete. I'm not talking about physical. I'm talking about mindsets. I'm talking about creativity, about dreams, visions, awareness. When you understand that this non-corporeal, non-physical world is all around you, it's here, right in front of us. And people who have died and come back say, the room was full of people. I saw my cousin. I saw somebody I didn't even know who was here, you know, 20 years before me. And they said, hey, hang in there. You're doing okay. And I came back. These kinds of things, these are realities. This is the multidimensional plane that we are part of. the awarenesses that we share as part of our tour through this reality are helpful. And I know all of my stuff may not work for you, but there are some cool things that you are doing that you can share with others in your circle that maybe you have kept to yourself because you didn't believe it possible for it to be real, for it to work. And it's your own special way that you have figured out how to manifest, how to shift, how to know. It's your way. It doesn't have to be like anybody else's. But if you don't share it and you don't give it wings, others lose. Does that make sense? Others can benefit from our little nuances and our little things that maybe this isn't good enough. Maybe this isn't correct. Maybe this isn't real. It's all real. Now take it forward. Expand your reality bubble. Okay? And take care. Conscious Living and Power Radio. Check out the blog, Wendy's Coffee House, or Twitter. I do that there too. But remember, you are creating reality. Give it your best shot and share your results. See ya.